Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Record. We are recording now. Okay.
Recording is good. And then, how else will everyone know that we need to gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss?
Yeah, I have my new computer all set up now with new monitors, new everything. So Inevitably, this podcast will fail on one of the things. Like, I don't think people quite understand the tenuous system I have in understanding how electronics work. So it's like I had my thing set up on my old laptop, on my old computer that worked really well for, 6 years that I had it, my old desktop. And now that I got my new one, it's like I have to repeat all of these old processes with new technology. And I don't know if I can do this.
Band-aids and rubber bands, baby.
I don't know if people really have any, like, especially let's say boomers in general, have any idea how much technology is kept together with rubber bands and band-aids.
Oh yeah, no, it is. It absolutely is. Yeah. They think it just works.
Yeah, and the kids do too. Like, I think that's the problem, is like the Gen X millennials who grew up having to like put together our own desktops and our own laptops and everything. Well, not laptops, but our own desktops. Oh,
yeah, I used to build towers. But like, here's the weird thing. Like, this is something, I mean, hopefully someone else can maybe relate to my experience, because we're in an age group where we have extremely vast differences in the technology that we're using, even though it's the same thing. Like, computers were always a thing when we were, when we existed.
Yes.
Like, there were always computers. But the difference between what a computer is now and a computer was back, early 90s, is ridiculous. Like, the difference is it's sci-fi levels of difference.
Yeah, I think I'll push back on that a little bit, that computers are essentially the same thing. I mean, if I opened up a computer in 1996 and I opened up a computer now, I could say, okay, that's the processor, that's the graphics.
As someone who built towers, that's not even close.
What are you talking about? No, because it's the same exact shit. They look a little different, but it's in the same place. It's
so much different. There's like the SSDs, like hard drives don't look anything like hard drives used to. Like,
yeah, they don't look the same, but you know what they are. Like, you can make
if someone told you, yes, but if you looked at the little black, like, Seagate, if you took a little black Seagate and showed it to me in 98 when I was building a tower, I'd be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, well, of
and
course
if you told you, me you it's might a hard drive,
but you could figure it out if you just looked at where it's plugged into.
If you told me it was a hard drive, I'd be like, oh, okay.
No, you'd be able to figure it out. You just, as long as you know that technology is different, you'd be able to figure that out, I think. Because I mean, it's the same exact, it's like looking at, it's like when you're in high school and you're dissecting a fetal pig or a frog. It's like, yeah, it looks different, but all the stuff's essentially in the same spots.
There's so many things that don't exist anymore, like in a computer, like sound cards, like, are gone.
Okay, yeah, sound cards are gone. Yeah, but then again,
there's tons of stuff that I could look at it. If you showed me a computer now and, if you took a computer from now and showed it to me, back then, I would be like, that is clearly a computer. Like, yes, obviously that part I would get.
But it's the same thing. It's like, it's two different animals, but you're looking and it's essentially the same thing. Like, the heart is going to look different between a human and a frog, but it's relatively in the same spot. And you could kind of, if you use context clues, you could figure out, oh, that's the heart. Plus, there is no sound card anymore. But then again, people have their appendixes removed.
Plus, like a high speed Ethernet cable, I'd be like, the fuck is this?
I mean, but you looked at a high speed internet cable, you'd be able to say, like,
I'm not saying you wouldn't be able to figure it out. Obviously, you could figure it out. Someone who drove a Model T with like all of the levers and whiz bangs could figure out how to drive a 2005 Ford Taurus or whatever. I'm not saying that you couldn't figure what I'm saying is, in the process of building, because there's so much less and there's so many things, like, so building a tower in the 90s was not, you know, easy, but it was significantly easier than now, because like everything was slotted and you had to be like, all right, so now this, and like it was very hard to make physical mistakes. I find that now it's very easy to make physical mistakes because so much is integrated into so many things. Because like I look at my computer like right now, and like just the actual like how many objects are in the tower. It's like there's two hard drives, there's the motherboard, there's my graphics card, and then like fans. Like yeah. That's it. Like there's barely anything in the box. And like before in the 90s, like your tower was full. Like when you popped open the frame, it's just like, oh yeah, there's a slot for everything. So I find that now when you're building a computer, it's far more likely that you'll make a mechanical error where it's like, you didn't connect the PSU to the right thing here, so that's why your thing's not turning on. It's like, oh, and it's like, or you had, my favorite is like you had this this connector was reversed. So like that's why your computer wouldn't boot up, because this little connector here, you need to swap the directions these are going.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So I find as computers have gotten more user friendly and they do more for people, I find that the like nitty gritty like guts are actually harder to get into. Because like if you took a computer from the 90s and you disassembled it, you could probably over enough time figure out what each component is, because every component was individual. Now so much of stuff is integrated, you wouldn't be able to do that.
That's very true. There is that aspect of it, and that's also part of the problem. Is what I was getting to originally is that building a computer in the 90s led you to be able to build a computer in 2021, and now like, but the problem is that you have people who are like boomers, and you have, I think, maybe not. Let's just say boomers, for example, they never had to do that. They never took apart anything to fix it, because they're the ones who specifically developed products that are designed to be thrown out once they break.
Yes, they bought the e-machine.
Yeah. So they have that theory in their head of like, oh, I can't, you know, I gotta throw this out and get a new one. But in reality, most of our technological infrastructure in terms of computers is all old technology that needs to be taken apart and fixed. Like you can't buy a new, you know, a new yes. server right off.
There's so much stuff that's being held together by some dude who's like, you know, in his 50s, who's got a pager. And he's like it's been his hobby for like 20 years.
Yeah. And that's
like,
exactly.
Yeah. That guy's keeping North Dakota running. Like if that guy dies, North Dakota is just going to go dark.
Well, look at what happened in Texas.
that's true.
And it's, you know, it's, but that's, you know, also what led me to be able to work in 3D printing and shit like that, because in 3D printing, if something goes wrong with the print, I look at the machine and I go, okay, it's not this. It's this. Let's fix this. Right. So, and I'm able to do that myself and figure out shit. But then, I'll work with someone who's a little bit maybe older than me or hasn't had that same sort of background in technology. And they're like, why isn't this working? And I'm like, well, have you checked this? No, we'll check it and see if it works. And it's like, I have to do that like 30 times with this guy because he just can't. Do it.
The best is like
own.
The best is they don't default to the, like the stand. Like I know it's like a IT like joke meme, but I fucking swear like so many times, like literally it's just like, just restart it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's the truth.
Like, so many of them don't do that like basic step, and it's just like you called me for help with this, like literally just go to start, hit restart. Like what's wrong with you? Well, like that should be your first step. If that doesn't work, then maybe start thinking about contacting your IT guy.
Well, I had these two beautiful cinema screen monitors, right, that I wanted to keep for my new computer. But I plug them into the new computer, and it's like they're only showing up as, I don't know, like what, 1600 by 800 resolution.
Okay, the resolution's messed up.
And the resolution's all messed up, and I can't figure out what's going on. So I literally spent like an entire night trying to figure out what's going on, doing research, doing some Google. I called up a buddy, and he actually did a remote like he came onto the computer through a remote access and was trying to figure shit out, and we couldn't do it. And so finally, though, I figured it out, though, that cinema screens need a special type of adapter to go into a display port and blah, 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 blah. They're kind of expensive. So I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to buy two new monitors. Yeah, I felt really, really bad about doing that because I felt it as a failure as a tech guy to be able to figure out.
Oh, well, I mean, no, you figured out the problem. You figured out the problem. It was just too expensive to fix.
Well, that's exactly that,
that's
it.
That's a classic tech guy solution.
Yeah, not when it's your own money. When it's like when it's your company's money, who gives a fuck? But when it's your own personal
company's
money,
it's never too expensive to fix if it's your company's money.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is that myself, I'm kind of like I pride myself on being able to Band-Aid and rubber band it.
Well, I think that goes back to my point about how so many things are integrated now, and I think that actually makes it harder to do any kind of bootstrapping, bootlegging shit. Cause it's just like, yeah, you can't actually jury rig this because like it's built in, like, I don't know, just like,
no, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You can't jury rig it as much, but that's also my own fault because they're Apple monitors. And it's like, I'm doing an Independence Day where I'm trying to integrate Apple into alien technology.
Oh man. That's it's all over for you.
Yeah. I'm plugging in my monitors. I'm like, I've created a virus that can take down a spaceship.
Funny moment about monitors. I was looking at like maybe making a small, like try, like, do you remember the PS1 that they released it was kind of at the very end of the PS1 life cycle, like where it was the tiny, like super small PlayStation and it had the built-in monitor on top.
Yeah.
Yes, it was like a portable PlayStation, but like it was a legit PlayStation. It played discs and stuff. So I was like, oh, I bet I could make something like that, like similar, and do it, you know, myself, and like make a portable retro, you know, like game station. I'm like, that might be pretty cool. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll start with, you know, seeing what is available for monitors. So what's really funny is that monitors and TVs are so cheap, and so just ubiquitous. I was not prepared for the fact that I can't, like, small LCD displays, like, kind of don't exist anymore. Like, I went to the smallest and cheapest possible monitors / TVs I could possibly find, started at Best Buy. I'm like, yeah, let's start there. I think legit, it was like 24 inches was the smallest, and it was like $98. I was like, Jesus Christ. I was like, well, I guess that kind of like throws this out the window, because I mean that's cool, like it's sweet that like monitors are not expensive, but for what I was trying to do, it kind of like threw that out the window. So that was just a humorous thing I noticed, because I mean it had been a long time since I've like looked for any sort of specific like parts of that. It seems like all of the smaller LCD displays have moved to completely commercial.
Well, like, and that's like the problem I had with the monitors, is like I was trying to hold on to these monitors that I had, these, because they were beautiful, they had great resolution, even for being, I want to say they were almost 15 years old, but they were gorgeous. And I was just like, it's going to cost too much to get a monitor that's equivalent, right? And I didn't want to downgrade. So I looked online. I was like, that it's only going to cost me $200 a monitor. Oh, that's not bad.
yeah, exactly.
Equivalents. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many weird like bits of that too. Cause like there's like the people were trying to use that thing, the FrameMeister. I don't know if you remember that, but Pat, you might have heard Pat talk about it.
Probably.
But what the FrameMeister was, and this is about like
old Pat's tech, really into submarines now. So
the submarines, the Hunt for October.
Yes.
the FrameMeister is basically something that was like, it was very expensive, and essentially what it did is it like let your old console, basically it emulated an old TV on your new TV.
Yes,
or
I remember that.
Console. Yeah. So like, and that was like ludicrously expensive, like for that very like targeted specific thing. So I found that like, you know, trying to bootstrap old stuff to new stuff is like very, very pricey. And also, if you're just trying to do old stuff, the collector's market is insane. Like so many things are like ridiculously expensive. Cause I was thinking, you know, it'd be cool to get like a PC 98, which is basically a Japanese version of like an advanced like Amiga. You know, it's a computer, but it's mostly for games. So like that's the same thing. And I was like, it's gonna be cool. I need an Amiga. Like same thing. All of these old computer, like all of these old like computers that are like mostly a very expensive console. Like they're, you know, they're for video games, but they're a computer. The collector's market on all of those, just top to bottom, ludicrous. I cannot believe how expensive it is. It's like, well, it's like, do you want to pay double the price of buying two PS5s to buy fucking 1995 technology? Get into retro computing.
Well, it's part of a problem that I've seen overall, and I think I've talked about on this podcast before, where it's people don't collect because they like things. People collect because they want to get fake internet points.
Or value, like perceived value. I think
that's but I think it's more than perceived value. It's like, so let's take, for example, Tomb Kings, right? You have been complaining about the ludicrous prices of Tomb King models.
Oh, they're absurd.
Yeah, which is funny because Tomb Kings aren't really that rare. Like,
no, they were almost all plastic. They were produced for a fucking decade. There's tons of them.
They were produced for a long ass time. They're almost all plastic. It's not like Games Workshop purposely produced less of them.
It's not like squats, those squat models are actually hard to come by because they only produce them for a very short period of time and they're all metal.
So, but the thing is that I personally, this is not necessarily the truth because I don't know, but I personally think, excuse me, that Tomb Kings are being bought up by people so that they can post pictures of them on Facebook, Reddit, Instagram and say, look what I picked up in a, you know, so-and-so, so they can get fake internet points. They don't actually care about putting together a Tomb Kings army or painting any of the models or playing, heaven forbid, playing with them. they just want to post a picture and say that they got them and say that they, and it happens a lot with especially Old Hammer or Middle Hammer stuff where you get boxes and they just want to post a picture of the box and say, look what I got, and get fake internet points for that. And I think that's kind of like a problem with just old things in general, is that combining a collector's market with a way to show off your collection creates this weird system where people are just buying stuff to show it. Like,
well, there's definitely an angle of people who are in quote unquote investing in the set.
Well, there's that as well. And they've never obviously collected Beanie Babies.
Well, that's the thing. See, Beanie Babies are actually a great example of how you can follow. So Beanie Babies are the best example of this, but Beanie Babies, the equivalent to Beanie Babies right now would be Funko Pops. They'd be like, if you are buying into Funko Pops as a quote unquote investment, that's Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
But if you're buying into, I don't know, like, it's the du jour, Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
Like Pokemon card, that's the thing. Like the way collectibles work, the ones that are made as limited collectibles, the biggest difference between that and Beanie Babies is like Beanie Babies produced, you know, they're going to make 10,000 of the pink flamingo. They're going to make 10,000 of the boar. They're going to make as many of those things as they possibly can because that's how many they want to sell. With card games, you know, CCGs, they do print runs, but the number of cards printed aren't the same. So like the Chase super rare foil variant that drops one per case is, you know, that's every six boxes. Like there's just not going to be a lot of that card like that physically exists, period. Like even if they triple or quadruple their production value, there's still not going to be that many of that one card that falls one per case. So over time, those cards are still going to go up in value. The only way Pokemon cards go to $0, the only way Pokemon cards Beanie Baby out, I should say, is if Pokemon dies as a franchise, which at this point it seems fucking impossible.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. Not saying dying, but I'm saying bottoming out or anything like that. The problem is that things will escalate in price until they don't. It's like some sort of, there will always be a moment where it's the next hot thing to collect pops up and people stop caring about Pokemon cards as an investment. There are so many people who collect Pokemon cards. There are still people who collect you know, that'll collect Tomb Kings because they like it, as opposed to collecting it for value. That always will. That always happens. I mean, it's always until a person like who's, I don't like using the term influencer, but an influencer says this is what you collect now, that a vast amount of people will collect that until another influencer tells them, no, this is what you collect now.
Here's the weird thing that's happening right now. And this is something I've never seen before in the collectibles industry, which is really fucking odd. But so what you said, I would 100% agree with, like, verbatim, like maybe like 2 years ago. But now at this current point, somehow the collector's trends are all happening simultaneously. So like Flesh and Blood, that game I talked about the game a little while ago.
Yeah.
It has the same level of frenzy and investment that Pokemon does at the same time of Pokemon. Like, they're happening at the same time. And also, you know, even Magic has experienced a huge surge of people buying. Yeah. Every single collectible game is surging at the same time, which is like, so on the one hand, like, yes, I agree that influencers definitely are driving Pokemon, but I think what they did is they drove Pokemon into the stratosphere rather than just the standard, yeah, like where everything is going. But like, it's wild. Like, they're not people aren't moving from thing A to thing B. It's thing A and thing B are both just like, you know, to the moon, which,
yeah, it's
absurd.
It's parallel. It's what happens like with the during baseball cards, when baseball cards were really big.
Baseball cards got really big. They've ever been now.
What's that?
Baseball cards are bigger than they've ever been right now.
Yeah. Well, that's because
the sports and everything I just said about the collectibles market, like Pokemon, the sports industry makes that all look like nothing. Like, yeah, the sports cards market is absolutely like, I cannot believe the sports card market right now. It's actually unbelievable.
Yeah. You have sports cards. And then at the same time, you had all these parallel cards at the same time that people were claiming were collectible Desert Storm collectible trading cards. You know, you had all this going on, and it was like, it was parallel. And then you'd had the one that was worth the most, and everything else was kind of just like based upon speculation. And that's kind of what it is right now. It's just people are buying shit tons of stuff because they're being told, like, this is going to be worth money. Well, if that's going to be worth money, then this should be worth money. It's just, it's all bullshit. It's like, just collect what you want. It's like, people who collect for investment are never going to. Like,
that's what they're doing. They're all collecting for investment. They're not collecting they're not collecting because they have the itis.
Yeah. That's like, my mom collects because she has this weird idea in her head that stuff is going to be worth a lot of money. So, but she collects shit like tableware settings, cookie jars. That's, you know, awesome. And it's like, and
ooh, I like cookie jars.
I do like cookie jars too. I have a cookie jar. It's a nice cookie jar. It's a mushroom.
Yeah, need a cookie jar. I you know what? I actually think I have a mushroom cookie jar.
Yeah, I think
it's adorable.
Which is actually kind of funny because the cookie jar that I have was actually in an episode of WandaVision. I got really excited about it. But it goes down, and my mom, I tell my mom this all the time. I go, when you die, I'm going to take all of this shit and burn it. There is no, I'm going to get money for it.
Cookie jars probably aren't going to burn very well.
No, I know they won't. But that's just, it's part of it. I'm not actually going to burn everything. I'm more going to just trash everything, but it's just symbolic in that I don't care. It's not going to be worth the amount of effort I have to put into selling it.
Right, right. Oh, for sure. Yeah, no question. Well, I mean, that's you know, true. It's also not even, actually, I wouldn't even say it's effort. It's literally like you have garage sale items, which means like, you know, it's put it on the lawn and hope that someone comes in and is like, oh, I want a mushroom cookie jar.
And then, mushroom cookie jar.
That's true. And then maybe field some questions as to, hey, I mean, it's cool that you have it, and I'm glad that I'm buying this mushroom cookie jar, but why do you have 37 mushroom cookie jars?
Exactly. Now let's move on to some gaming news, because there's actually gaming stuff I want to talk about.
Nice. I don't have anything, so yeah, go for it.
Well, my first question to you, Steve, is why do lizard men have nipples on the cover art for this for the new Underworlds box set?
Because it's fucking hot.
It's why do lizard people, like, isn't nipples on a lizard man like a new meme? Is it like why?
Well, no, there's like, all right, so like, I mean, the only one that I know 100%, there's like the Argonians, and if I remember correctly,
the lusty Argonian.
Yes, the lusty Argonian. I mean, someone who knows Elder Scrolls lore better than me can please feel free to correct me, because I'm going off of my like vague memories. But if I remember correctly, Argonians. So I'm gonna just substitute them for lizardmen, because all the lizardmen have big old bazonga jong junga funga wuggy mommy baby milkers in fantasy artwork, like always.
Repeat that again.
mommy big wove fujunga wunga sunga dunga huba mugga jugga huge gigantic mugga milkers.
I think that's different than what you said originally. I'm just being honest here.
No, it was exactly the same. Okay. No one play it back. So gazunga jungas. So anyway, so the explanation for that for Argonians is that they do lactate.
Well, that's bizarre.
I'm not saying it's not bizarre, but I mean, let's, you know, that is the explanation. The explanation is that they had like they come out of the eggs, and then as they're like, as they grow up, they do lactate. That is the explanation for Argonians. It's literally just like, yeah, they can do that. But also, if I remember correctly, there was definitely another franchise that had the same thing, but their explanation was that their lizard people were just warm-blooded. They just looked like lizards. So like they were basically mammalian, but they looked like lizards. So I can't say anything other than, I mean, nipples are hot, so they slap some nipples on lizardmen.
I do not agree. I think that lizardmen should not have nipples, because I believe that is scientifically inaccurate. I'm just saying.
I mean, we are talking about dinosaur men that fly through space, so we do want to make sure we're scientifically accurate, I'm sure.
Damn straight. You know, there are rules.
I almost forgot. We have the ultimate. I have the ultimate thing to shoot down any of your complaints. A wizard did it.
A wizard did it.
Yep, a wizard did it. There's nothing you can. There's no stronger argument. There's no stronger singular argument in all of fantasy fiction than just being like, a wizard did it, and then it's over.
I know you're not a huge. I know you haven't been watching any of the Marvel shows on Disney Plus.
No, I have not.
Yeah. But on the latest episode of Falcon and the Snowman, there was a line where they're talking about the differences between wizards and sorcerers. And Falcon goes, a sorcerer is just a wizard without a hat. And I was just like, that's hysterical.
that's completely inaccurate.
That from now on, that's going to be my my base description of differences between a sorcerer and a wizard.
That's
a sorcerer is just a wizard without a hat.
If you wanted to be legit about that, all you need to do is replace the word hat with spellbook.
Yeah, well, I'm
a sorcerer is just a wizard without a spellbook. That's legit what they are.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to be accurate with, though.
Because that's fine.
There's a difference between accuracy and trolling, and I much prefer trolling than accuracy any day of the week.
Yeah, but no one's gonna. Maybe I don't know.
No, it's actually T-H-E-R-E. They are.
Yeah, now that's really good. They are a myth.
Yeah, they are a myth.
Yeah, you're buying into the corporate propaganda.
That's the best part. You're buying into the corporate propaganda.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's so next level.
Yes. So like real news. So last week they dropped all of the new undead stuff. They're finally gonna do a Vampire Counts army, which I kind of predicted 2 years ago, but it popped up. So they, all of the undead stuff that they're releasing, you have for the Soulblight Gravelords and not Vampire Counts.
Yes, the Soulblight Gravelords, because presumably this is also where they're going to stick the white army,
the Wiggets.
Yes, the Wiggets.
The Wiggets. So they're doing new plastic Vampire Count cavalry.
They look very cool.
Yes, because they were the most expensive box set, I think, in Warhammer Fantasy.
Yes, and they were also a goddamn nightmare to assemble.
They were a nightmare to assemble
when they were metal. They were a nightmare to assemble when they were resin. They've always been a nightmare to assemble, and they were hideous models.
hideous models. So now they got a box set of five. I will be very interested to see how much this box set is. I bet you it's about a 60, right?
Yeah, I don't know, because we're gonna have to see how many points they are. Because if they remain the premium points cost that the super expensive metal box was, then I expect to see that. I would expect this plastic box to be extraordinarily expensive. Like you're like, whoa, wait, this is 5 Cav. Why is it this much money? If they keep the points cost, if they normalize their points cost a bit, or make them a bit, because the only other Cav I can think of that are super crazy expensive and super high in points are the Everchosen dudes.
Yeah.
But they're also significantly bigger. Like, yeah. there's only three, and I think they're $90. But they're also like way bigger. And in defense of that very high price point, for the most part, like, you're gonna need one box ever. Like, you would never really need more than one box, those guys. Yeah. And if you do the specialized army, like if you want to do like I'm doing Arcane and his bros, you need three boxes. So like even then, it's like not even that, like I mean, maybe four. So then like your army costs four boxes of those guys and one Arcane. So it's kind of like, yeah, like what do I call that? That's cheap expensive.
Yeah.
That's my thing. It's like yeah, it's expensive, but it's also cheap. It's cheap expensive.
Yeah, and you're not gonna really do well with that, so don't take that army.
That army is if you want style points. That army can't play the game.
Yeah.
It cannot play the game. It's if you want style points. That's and you'll definitely get style points if you show up with that army, because I mean it's a dope army, like concept wise, very cool.
It's dope.
It is. It's dope.
You're getting new you're getting new Skelebones. I really like the Skelebones, the new Skelebones. I'm still,
oh, they look awesome.
You know, there's something to be said about old skeletons that are just skeletons with a hand weapon, no armor, maybe a shield. It's just like they're so easy to paint and make look good.
I haven't made one of those in forever though.
I know. I just did. And so I'm looking at these, I'm like, you're probably, if you do the Skelebones, you're not going to need that many. As I always say, it's like with this arm, there also is new zombies too, which the fucking zombies are fucking great.
Zombies look awesome.
People are complaining about the root systems going through the zombies, but it makes sense stylistically. They're underground, right? There's going to be roots that grow through the zombies. Yeah.
I mean, they look awesome. And you know what? If you don't like the new zombies, use the old zombies.
Yeah, be that person. Be a failure.
Yeah. Use the horrible old zombies.
Yeah. No, I really like the new zombies, but I feel like,
although I will say with the old zombie, I have seen, I know it's not new, but I have seen a lot of old zombie plus current Empire Men mashups, and those model kits really do gel really well.
Oh, they
those
do make
excellent looking zombies. So like, yeah, if you don't like the new zombie look, just buy the current zombies and some current Empire units and just stick the pieces together, because they look great. Yeah. I don't know how, because like the models are like a decade apart, or maybe even more, but like the zombie bits just really gel with those Empire pieces, so like you can make some awesome looking zombies. You don't like the new one,
I want to say zombies, they were one of the first plastic kits, which I want to say came out around 97, 98. Yeah,
they're ancient. They're like, that's a fifth edition kit. For
yeah,
sure.
That's what I'm saying. In 97, 98. Because sixth edition didn't come out till 2000.
Yeah, because fourth edition plastics were all the single parts,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And then, well,
and there and were then, no there were no plastic zombies in fourth edition.
Yes. Right. Because the plastics.
Yeah.
Separate multi-part plastic kits didn't really come out until like late fifth.
Yeah, late
fifth, and then all of sixth.
Yeah, and then there was the newer state troops for Empire came out in seventh edition. I want to say 0405 ish. I'm not 100% on that, but it's right around 0405.
Yeah, so like almost 10 years apart.
Almost 10 years apart. But yeah, so, and they got the new skeletons, which, in this is what I think they're doing. I think that they're replacing how there used to be skeletons and then Graveguard. So I think they're getting rid of skeletons and these new guys are like new Graveguard.
They're in the middle. I don't know.
They're kind of like a mash of the two, because I think what you have is you're having, usually in a Vampire Counts army, you have a choice. You either go skeletons or you go zombies. You don't go both.
Yeah. You know, and zombies is usually if you're leading with necromancers.
Yeah. If you're leading with a necromancer. And so I don't know if you're going to need both of these in the new Vampire Counts book and the Soul Blight book. So we'll see on that one. But I think you and I were talking about this because they also have new bats, new big bats, fell bats.
Yeah, they look really cool.
Yeah, they do look really cool. And so more than likely, depending on what else is in the book, you'll probably have like two units of the fell bats and probably a big block of either zombies or skeletons as your three core choices.
Yeah, my personal, like, just my blind guess for what your army is going to look like for this thing, just seeing the models and going off of what AOS armies usually end up looking like, is like my blind guess, the generic startup is going to be a blob of 20 skeletons, a blob of 30 zombies, and then one, you know, roll the dice as your third battle line, because yeah, it'll be like, you know, if your general is on a vampire bat mount, whatever, you get to take bats as battle line. It's like, oh cool, so that your third battle line is bats. Or like
that would actually be a pretty badass unit, is like a vampire riding like on a giant the back bat. Of a giant bat.
Yeah, it'd be dope. And it's like, and it's, oh, if you take a vampire lord on, you know, Abyssal Terror or whatever, okay, then you get to take one unit of the super knights as battle line. It's like, okay, still cool, that's my third battle line is the super knights. Yeah. So that's what I think it's going to end up being, because they really moved to I was talking to Joe earlier, like, you know, a few weeks ago or whatever, but like I talked about how they, like, the definitions of what a horde army is have really changed, and the way horde armies like look are completely different. The only army I can legit think of, there's two that are like legit, like, these are horde armies. You are going to put a lot of models on the table. For the most part, they're pretty exclusive. It's just going to be the Night Goblins, or the Gloomspite Gits, I should say, and then some builds of Skaven. Yeah. And then other than those armies, there are particular builds for other armies where you can have like a huge amount of models, but I think the only ones where like the design really reinforces the like take more blobs, take bigger and more blobs, are those two armies. Because yes, there is the Slaanesh, like I think it's top tier Slaanesh army that is 200 gores.
Oh god.
And so like, yes, that is a horde army that exists. That book is not designed, like none of that is by design. That's just like happenstance. So yes, you can totally say like, yes, there are happenstance horde armies, but I think we're going with intended design. And I think the only two armies that are really like, I'm going to put an absolute monstrous amount of models on the table by design would be the Gloomspite Gits and the Skaven. So going by that and like seeing like how those armies are designed, how many models come out, even Legions of Nagash, like you're still only going to bring like, at max, you bring the one blob of 60 skeleton spearmen and that's it.
Like an actual top tier Nagash list, which I've been looking up, most of them run Nagash, like two units of Dire Wolves and like a blob of like 30 Skelebones. Yeah,
it's not even that big anymore, but that's what I mean. Like even then that army was like running a max of one unit of 60 like at in one build, and most of them have moved to lower builds, and that's what I mean. Like you're not going to see like you need 360 man blobs of zombies and 240 man blobs of skeletons. Those kind of like model count sizes, that's gone. Like that doesn't really like gone's not right, but it's very uncommon to see that now, just in general, because just the way the game operates. And also I think that's, there's another point to that too, is like the reason, and I think a lot of the reason some of those horde armies are Skaven notwithstanding, the reason that they're like not, they're always kind of not super great tournament wise. And this actually goes back to old 40K with the Guardsman army, where it's like, you basically make an army that draws because you go to time.
Yeah.
It's like, you physically like physically moving your models brings your army to time.
Yeah. The, and going on from some undead stuff, We have the new the seventh army, the seventh warband release for Dire Chasm, which is the Kanan's Reapers, the Bone Reapers.
I like to refer to my butt as the Dire Chasm.
The Dire Chasm. I was actually, when I looked at this, the immediate meme that came to my head was the Noah's Ark meme, where they have all of, like, there's Tyranids and then there's Necrons, and it shows like the Bone Reapers on the side, and is Noah going, "What the hell is this?"
Yes, I like it.
I absolutely hate these models. I hate the faces on them. I think they look so fucking stupid. I mean, I'm gonna buy them because I finally finished. I've painted every warband from season 1 to 3, and I'm almost done with season 4. I buy the lizard men today to like be fully caught up.
Nice.
It was a big emotional win for me when I finished all of that off.
Funny story, when I was attempting to do the same for season 1, I actually got stonewalled when I got to the dwarves and the skeletons, because I was like, I can't justify painting these models. I'm never going to use them. They're so bad.
Which is actually funny, because I've been playing Warhammer Underworlds online. I have not bought any of the expansions. I think it's kind of stupid that it only came with the 2. Like, at least in my honest opinion, the online game should have came with 4.
I think if you buy the online game, it comes with 4.
Oh, is that? If you get it free, you don't get the 4? That could be.
Yes, I'm almost certain, because the only army, because I bought the game, and the only army I don't have is the dwarves, because they're the DLC.
Which is actually funny, because I've been wrecking almost every army that I play as Stormsire, every warband, with the exception of the dwarves. And it's not because the dwarves are good. It's because I just can't roll against the fucking dwarves. Like
welcome to Shadespire when you have to roll dice, Joe.
I know. Well, it's the online's version is very much like, I just like, if rolling dice, I'm doing incredibly well against, you know, every warband that I'm coming up against. But the dwarves, it's like, okay, I have, you know, Stormsire goes up and runs up against the fucking Grimnir. And I'm like, every time first turn I get it, I'm like able to run up, and I whiff every fucking time.
To be fair, even if you didn't whiff, that model is very strong. Like, that is the one thing that the dwarves have in spades. Their yep. Warband leader is kind of ridiculous. He's very good.
And it's not that, and Steve, but yeah, it's not that I'm hitting and he's defending.
Oh yeah, you're just whiffing.
I'm just whiffing, and I'm like, I'd get so mad at it. Like after turn one, if that happens, I'm just like, you know, fuck it. I'm not playing the rest of this game. I just don't understand how that happened. It happened like 5 times in a row, Steve. Like,
I played the Khorne Warband a long time, and like, let me tell you, like, there's basically if my first turn is charged with Bloody Sake, and then he whiffs, and then they kill him in their first turn, it's a scoop. Like, it's legit. Like, that's the game. Like, yeah. And that's unfortunately how, you know, Shadespire works. But this comes back to like the weird design space that Shadespire exists in, is designed like top to bottom. Like, that game is competitive. Like, it really is. Like, they designed a competitive game, but they have, I still think they have yet to resolve the fact that they have designed a competitive game that is marketed to, supported by and run by a bunch of casuals. Like, that's like, there's really no other way to like slice that, because like, there's, you know, tournament stores run the games with the different fucking rules. They're like, oh, this tournament's different. We're only doing best of ones. We're not doing best of threes. Like, there's so many like variants of how like tournaments are being run in the game. Like, it's a competitive game, and it's not handled competitive, organized play wise. So you have issues where like in Magic, like, you scoop to go on to the next game. Like, that's how it works, because like, time is a resource in all of these games, and people are used to like Age of Sigmar or even 40K, where like, you just play the entire match until the time runs out or the game is concluded. Like, that's just how those games play, and that's how people are used to playing it. So like, with Shadespire, and like, you know, and to an extent like Magic, any competitive game, like, if you know you're going to lose, or if you think it's likely that you're going to lose, in many cases, it's better to just scoop because you want that. Cause like, you know, like if it's game one out of three games, cause that's how all competitive games should be. You're like, options are to play it out, possibly spending a bunch of time losing. And then if you win game two, you know, we want to play to our outs and we want to assume success. So we're going to win game two. How long is that going to take? Will we get enough time to play game three? So that's why you scoop. So like with what you just said, like where your general rolls up fucking whiffs and then gets his ass beat by dwarves because of bad dice rolling, like you would scoop and go to game two. Like that's a legit acceptable way it should be and how competitive games operate. But when you're talking minis games and minis gamers, dude, I cannot tell you how many times like someone got insanely butthurt that I like scooped. Like, I'm like, no, Sake died. I'm like, the game's over. Like, they're like, well, you should play it out. I'm like, no.
Well, yeah, like,
no.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the problem too, is that they use glory as part of the like tie breaking. So if you do scoop, people don't get their glory that they need to boost up them in the rankings if they get tied up for a 3-0.
Well, they buried that in one of the rule books, but they actually had a how much glory you get for a scoop. They gave a,
but once again, it's fun. A game run by casuals and they don't pay attention to that shit.
Right. And also because the number was not nearly, that's wherein lies the real issue is the number was not high enough, because like I was telling you, like when I was playing, whenever I'd see an undead player, I'm like, fuck yeah, this is time to pinball my score. And like, I'm not even joking. Actually, it was funny. There was a tournament Tim ran, and the when the first round was over, my first round opponent was an undead dude. And by the time the first round was over, I had more glory. Like once the tournament was over, I looked at like the scores, and I was like, oh, I won this tournament after the first round because I had so much glory because he just kept bringing his skeletons back and I would just kill them. And so like, I literally farmed this guy for glory because I'm like, oh, I'm not going to attack his general because he keeps bringing his skeletons back. So I'll just be like, all right, kill that skeleton, kill that skeleton, kill that skeleton, kill that skeleton. So I would score 4 glory in a turn and then score a bunch of my objectives. And then like, I just wouldn't press and like let him use his actions to bring skeletons back. And I'm like, cool, I'll kill them more. So by the time, I think I had like 28 glory by the time the first round was over, which was more than enough to win after the tournament was settled, like just the 28, not counting the glory I got from my other rounds. So yes, there's a huge problem with the way that they did tiebreakers on that. You can't tie a game component into tiebreakers like that. It has to be on match win percentage, which is how every other competitive game works.
No, and you're absolutely right on that one. It doesn't make any sense to have it tied to glory, because there are certain warbands that are designed to win on low glory, and there are certain warbands that are designed to win on high glory.
Yes, so absolutely.
And that goes to my biggest fucking complaint about that game, is that FAQs are too fucking slow.
Yes,
you can't. Yeah.
I mean, they really need to just go to on match win percentage. Like, there's no reason not to do that, because I mean, that's the competitive game standard. Because when you make it glory based, that means I think War Machine always called it strength of schedule, yeah. And that's how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like, if I beat you, and you spend the rest of the tournament beating every other player in round one. You know, I beat you in round one, and then you win all the rest of your matches. You should count my win against you in Magic or in any other game with an actual competitive scoring system will count for more than if I beat you round one and you lost every game. That's strength of schedule. It's how good did your opponents do that you beat? Because when you beat someone, you want them to win the rest of their games because it makes your tiebreakers better. But with Shadespire, because of the glory system, the way they do the scoring, you actually get an inverted benefit for strength of schedule. Like, you want to play against the worst players at the tournament.
Yeah.
You want every one of your opponents to be the worst possible, because you could just farm, like I just said, you farm them for glory instead of worrying about playing the game.
Yep.
Which is not what you, you know, like kind of the opposite of what you want work in a competitive game. Like generally in a competitive game, you want to be seeking out the strongest opponents. You know, that's the usual rule of thumb. But Shane Spire's like, no, you get legit rewarded for beating up the people who don't know what they're doing.
Anyway, I'm a big fan of there's so many things I like about the game and so many things that make the game horrible that it's I tend to feel like the internet meme of fan of game complains endlessly about it is like so true with me.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I think that game would probably be a lot better just simply I've talked about it before, but like the biggest weakness of that game is actually the neutral cards. Like the neutral cards should not be the way they are. The neutral cards should be, there's a list of like, I don't know, 40 that come out per season. There are 40 neutral cards. They come in the base set. That's the neutral cards you can use. And then every other card should be
Warband specific.
Warband restricted. Because like I said before, Great Concussion would have not been a problem if the only warband who could use it was the dwarves.
Yeah.
Or no, Earthquake. They had Earthquake. I don't remember who had Great Concussion. But like if Earthquake was only usable by the dwarves, that card would have never been banned or in any sort of bad situation.
The problem with that, Steve, is you can't make money doing it that way. But that's
you can because you're saying people want to buy all the warbands.
Yeah.
I think there's enough I think there's enough people who, well, also if you up your game balance, you can just make more warbands competitive. You can easily make people want to buy it because they're like, because you can tap into the FOMO. Be like, yeah, if you don't get the new warband, you might not be ready to win because the new warband's dope. just the classic style. Like, just do that. That's the standard style of Workshop from forever. So like, you don't need to force people to buy all the warbands by putting the neutral cards in. Just make the warbands all good.
Make the warband. Yeah, I think you're. I think you're. What's the word I'm looking for? That's some rose colored glasses right there.
Right now,
anybody who wants to play competitively is spending what $210 per, or it's more now, but like $210 per season just to stay competitive. Mm.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't paid attention, but like there were absolutely warbands you could skip before.
Yeah.
Like there were 100% warbands you could skip. You could just look at their neutral cards and be like, you can skip this warband. You can skip this warband. So like you could absolutely get by with not buying everything because like you only needed the critically good cards. I think people would still just buy them all. I don't know. I actually like determine that the game would need to just be reevaluated and relaunched essentially. And so we'll never know the answer, but yeah, I do believe that people would still buy almost as many. Cause that's the thing too. That goes back to my point. Like when I played against so many people who were at a tournament who didn't own all the warbands.
Yeah.
So like the game's already quote unquote designed to force you quote unquote to buy all the warbands, and like they didn't even have all the warbands. So I can't quite agree.
Well, and the funny thing is too, and I've said this before, for people who want to get into Shadespire or Underworlds, what they need to do is they need to buy the warband that they want, you know, whatever is the one that they are most attracted to, and then they. All they have to do is like, oh, if you want a specific card, just go to like one any of the thousands of websites that have the cards all scanned in, download it, cut it, put it in a card sleeve with whatever back you want, and just play like that. Like that makes way more sense than buying every warband. Now, for someone like me who wants to paint every warband, that's different.
Yes. Then that's fair. And in most cases, it doesn't even matter because like, there's so much you can instantly find out if a warband's worth buying or not by doing that method where you just like download and print the cards.
Yeah. So let's go on the other release that I really wanted to talk about was their new Necromunda box set, Hive War, which looks fucking phenomenal. If you guys haven't played Necromunda, the new version of Necromunda, it's a very good game. It's Warcry, but for 40K. Is really good. I highly recommend it. It doesn't play the same as Warcry, but it's got the similar feel to it, where you're playing on just like a, you know, a terrain board, like a smaller board. It's very quick, fast game. And the new box set comes with Zone Mortalis, which you could also play Zone Mortalis, which is a very fun game with.
Finally, the Zone Mortalis.
Well, it's cheap Zone Mortalis, because Zone Mortalis is expensive as all hell from fucking Forge World, except unless you have a 3D printer, which goes bzzz, or
brr. 3D printer go brr.
Yeah, 3D printer go brr. But the new box set comes with Eschers and Delacues. So my favorite Necromunda gang, which is the Delacues.
The Delacues.
Or Delax. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's ever been an official like pronunciation on that.
Maybe they'll be the real fun one, where you can find an audiobook where it pronounces it one way and then an audiobook where it pronounces it the other way.
Delacroix.
That's always my favorite, when people are trying to argue over pronunciations and stuff, and then someone like interjects with an audiobook and is like, no, it's this way, and then someone counters with a different audiobook and is like, well, in this book.
You know, I love that. I've heard so many different pronunciations of that gang that I don't even know what it is anymore. what I pronounce
just,
it is.
Just call them the Delanois.
The Delanois, yeah.
The Delanois.
They do kind of, they have the bald head and the glasses, so.
There you go, the Delanois.
They are my favorite gang, though. I love that gang. I love this. I love the design style of it. I think it's a very unique look. But it's also, this goes down to something that, like, that's the most exciting 40K release that they were talking about. Mm. Because 40K has been so stale lately.
Yeah, they've really just been like riding the Marines' dicks really hard. I don't know. Yeah. Like I mean, we know it's always like the joke, but like, damn, like they, like yeah. Recently it's been bad, like they're, really bad.
They're releasing a new sculpt of the Predator for Sisters of Battle, which is like, meh, whatever. However, they are doing at the end of the presentation, they're doing a snakebite army for orcs.
That's pretty cool.
Which does look sexy, but all they were like, this is something that you're probably going to see, you know, a year down the road.
Like, hey, I mean, but to be fair, anything is better than nothing at this point.
Yeah. So, and I just find it really funny that their best-selling game is just so fucking stale right now. I mean, the latest.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you why. It's because whatever they're doing is working. Like, yeah. if they weren't still selling like through the moon numbers, I'm sure they would be changing their release schedule. But I'm sure at this moment they're still selling through the moon numbers. So,
I mean, the Caudor figures for Necromunda are super sexy, wonderful figures. They're going to cost $30 for the gang, $35 for the gang that you're going to buy, and you're going to get all the figures that you need. And it's just like, oh, I'd much rather do that than spend, you know, $500-$600 on a 40K army that is 40-year-old models. know? Like, yes. The latest issue of White Dwarf, they had a whole like 10-page thing on Beeltan Eldar. And the models in that article were seriously 30 years old, Steve. 30 year old.
Yeah, they haven't done new Beeltan stuff. Like, they haven't ever, done as far any as I know. Like, the striking scorpions are the same striking scorpions from 92, if I'm not wrong.
No, those got resculpted the 2000s? Early 2000s, though. So they're still 20-year-old models.
Okay. I mean, they're still old as shit.
Because, like, there was.
Malgan Ra doesn't have a new model.
No.
Even the Malganator.
Yeah. They have the new plastic Jane Zar, right? For the Howling Banshees. Didn't they have, like, plastic Howling Banshees just come out? Not too long ago.
I don't actually know on that one.
It's been a while, but it's like, seriously, like, well, no one buys Eldar models. Well, no one buys Eldar models because you're not putting out new Eldar models. Well, we're not putting out exactly. New Eldar models because no one's buying Eldar models.
Yes, that a lot of the GW decisions really seem to boil down to that. What you just said.
No, actually, right? actually, the funny thing is that the decisions are made because it has absolutely nothing to do with. The company, it's all the sculptors. Like, they base everything off of what the sculptors come out with. So if the sculptors were like, I want to make Eldar stuff, they'd be like, okay, let's make Eldar stuff and build a release around it. But no one does that. Like, sometimes they'll give them direction. They'll be like, okay, we want to do a new Eldar range, come up with all of this stuff, and they'll be like, we came up with a Farseer, and they'll be like, oh, that's it? And like, yes, that's all we've come up with.
It's just a Farseer.
The design studio literally pushes almost everything.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's some like vague direction given to them. Like, we want to do vampire counts. And then they'll be like, okay, they'll come up with all these vampire counts figures that they want to do or something like that. You know, I don't really know the inner machinations, but I do know a lot
the
of
inner machinations.
I do know
Leonardo,
that
Leonardo.
That's the ugliest damn bong I've ever seen. I do know that a lot of like the stupid Marine shit that you see nowadays is because it's like what the design studio came up with. Mm-hmm. What if we take a land speeder and we put wheels on it?
Yeah, you know, so many of those models, I they're one of those things that bugs me about almost universally when I see one of those like doofy looking models. Doofy. I'm always like, this model is like a few pieces of plastic away from just being fine. Like the one that looks like the Mario Kart one.
Yeah.
Like if you just enclosed that and like didn't have the Marines showing, that model would be fine.
But Steve, how would you know it's a Marine thing with if you don't see the Marines?
I know that bugs the crap out of me. It always bugged the crap out of me with the land speeders too. It's just like there's just fucking, it should be a box. Like there's no way that this wouldn't be a box. The only excuse for any of those vehicles where you can actually have a Marine showing, and this is it, is bikes. Yeah. Like if you're gonna do bikes, okay, you got it. You want to have a Marine visible riding a vehicle, put them on a bike. And if you do a hover bike, sure, that's also fine. Like legit, like, you know, single hover bike thing, like fucking Mega Man X style. Like, okay, cool. Do
a
that.
A cat is fine too.
Yeah, a cat is fine too. but like the anything with wheels, anything armored, like anything that isn't for the most part just designed to move them as fast as possible, seeing a bike, move a single person as fast as possible, should be, you know, fully armored because it's combat. So if you, especially something that's like a mobile weapons platform, like it's like that doesn't make any sense that you would have your gunner exposed if you could avoid it. Like, and this is, you know, the grim darkness of the far future, so they certainly could avoid it because they could just put them in metal boxes.
Exactly.
That's something that always just irks me. Like, ooh, it's so irksome. Like with the
ooh,
with
it's the drag- so irksome.
It really is. That's me. I'm like, oh, it's so irksome. Like that's the thing that like the goofy baby carrier models that like I actually don't mind the goofy baby carrier models. I do mind the fact that the pilot is completely exposed. That's the part that bugs me. Like the concept of a Grey Knight in Terminator armor piloting what is essentially a bigger suit of Terminator armor, while that is a bit silly, it's the silliest part is the fact that he's just straight up exposed. Like, if you have a vehicle, one of the advantages to a vehicle is you are not exposed to enemy fire. So you can operate your vehicle theoretically longer, like, because you will not be shot in the face. But now instead, we've made a vehicle where, yeah, you know this thing called a sniper? Yeah, they're just going to kill you. Like, you're going to be running in your, like, super-powered armor. You're going to be like, hell yeah, I'm ready to versus. And then, like, some dude's just going to las-gun sniper you from, like, you know, 2 miles away. Sorry. Why didn't you guys make it armored so I can't get shot in the face? We didn't think it looked this cool.
Speaking of Space Marines, I just wanted to point out again, the Uriel Ventress model that they're releasing is the ugliest fucking paint job I have ever seen Games Workshop put out in probably the last 10 years. It is
Uriel Ventress. I have to look this up.
The model of him. I love the fact that I tell my wife I'm doing a podcast downstairs, and she's like, you know, now is the perfect time to vacuum.
Let's see, Uriel Ventress. How do I spell Uriel?
U R I E L, I believe, or E-I-L.
I'm looking at. It just looks like a fucking normal ass paint job to me.
Look at that face though. That face is fucking terrible. The hair that they gave him, I don't even know how.
Well, are we talking about the sculpt or the paint job?
The both, because the sculpt is bad to begin with. I think the head sculpt on him is bad to begin with. They tried to make it too much like the artwork, and so the hair makes him look like every doofy former military guy that ever comes into Games Workshop.
Yes.
So I think that's part of the reason why they did it that way, is because they were like, we want to appeal to the ex-military crowd. And so like all those guys who come in who are, you know, a little overweight at that time, you know, they're like, I want to play Marines. So they do that. And then the paint job that they gave him just makes him look fat.
Maybe I'm not looking at the same model because like it just looks like a dude in the Space Marine in power armor. Like,
no, I fucking hate it. I hate it so much.
I have no idea where you're coming from on this one.
What's the hold on. I gotta see if I can find the meme.
Like, to me, he looks like he's got a silly face, kind of. Like, mostly because his hair is like really square, which is really weird looking. But like, if you slapped a helmet on him, he would just look like a regular ass Marine. Like, I don't know. I do not see any reasoning for your hatred of this particular miniature.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much.
I mean, that's fine. You are allowed to shit on whatever, but it just I just don't see it.
It's the Always Sunny thing. It's like where I do not like this model, Steve. Yeah, it's smug aura mocks me.
It's smug aura mocks me. I will give you that. It does have a smug aura, and I would immediately not put his head on and just put a helmet on.
Exactly. If there was just a helmet on, I'd be so much happier.
Yeah.
But then if they had the helmet on, how would you know it's your Ventress?
That's the first thing I would do is just like slap the helmet on. I don't know. I hate the only models that shouldn't have helmets are like where there's a really good explanation as to why the like specific character wouldn't be wearing something that is protecting their most vulnerable body part. So like Abaddon not wearing a helmet makes sense because he is made of towering arrogance. Like, yes, I will. You know what? That's legit. But even I believe the Abaddon model even comes with an optional helmet. but I could at least be like, yeah. Abaddon, I could totally see like rolling into battle without a helmet on. Cause one, he's a Chaos Marine. So he's, you know, he's mad. Like as in madness, mad, not mad as in angry. That's Angron. But like, so he's a madman. He's completely, you know, full of like towering arrogance. Like no one could possibly stop me. So like, sure. That dude not wearing a helmet into battle, that makes sense. That's like a, you know, that's like a biker dude not wearing a helmet on his bike because he's just like, I'm too tough to die in a bike accident. like that legit. Okay, cool. But like someone who is, you know, in theory, like not a regular person, obviously, because he's a Space Marine, but like a standard Space Marine who doesn't have powers beyond being a Space Marine, like you'd wear a helmet because that, like, outside of the basic protection that a helmet offers, their helmets presumably have their communication systems inside them.
Yeah. Well, so it's
if
just
if you wanted to issue orders to your troops, you would need to talk. So you're telling me that this dude, rather than just having a helmet on, going like, squad A, move up to the bastion, squad B, lay down heavy fire support, rather than doing that, like in his helmet, he's like yelling. Like, he's just like cupping his hands around his mouth and like yelling orders, and like he's just got Marines like shrugging at him from like super far away.
Yeah, no, it's you're absolutely right. And the problem is that that's what happens when you design an army that is so generic that you can't make anything really unique about it. So you have to have guys without their helmets on to make it.
Yeah, I don't get it. And like, what's his name? The dude who's been, you know, the Primarchs without helmets? Like, sure. You want to do that? Fine. Because they're essentially like demigods. So like that dude wants to roll out without a helmet? Okay. Like he probably could just get shot in the face with a bolter like several times and just be like, eh. You know, if that's the case, sure. But even then, the Primarch has a helmet option.
It was. Yeah, exactly.
What's his name? Reboot Ghouli Man.
Yeah.
Reboot Ghouli Man has a helmet option, and it looks much better than his non-helmet option, but still.
And speaking of a painting, I want to create a flow chart. I don't know if you're better at flow chart creation than I am, but it should be a flow chart that starts off at the top. Should I prime my models white? And then it should just be a flow chart that goes down to no. Based off my recent experience in painting with priming white.
I have used white in very rare occasions and it's been very good, but man, you need to be very, very certain that white is the primer you need.
Well, I was laughing at it because like I actually attempted to create a flow chart about this, but it was like, so the first one is, are you a professional painter? And then it says yes. The next one was Have you won a Golden Demon for a non-staff junior or historicals category, a golden demon or crystal brush for a non-staff, non-junior, non-historical category, or do you just paint for lazy people at your local game store? And then it's like professional painter. And then the other one's like, yeah, I'm not a professional painter. And it almost everyone goes to no, except for like, if you are a super professional painter who feels that it's absolutely necessary to paint this model white in order to achieve the effects that you need, only time to ever prime white, because it's not worth the hassle 90% of the time.
Yeah, and like I said, it's the amount of times you will need, basically I would say the amount of times you would want white primer means you probably don't need white primer on hand. Like, yeah, that's like that's basically like the amount of times you want it. But like, for example, if I was painting a classic skeleton army where the skeletons basically have nothing, they're just skeletons with spears and shields, that's an army I'm absolutely priming white. No question.
See, I didn't with mine. All I did was I primed black, but I'm also doing vampire counts. Tomb Kings might be a little different, but vampire counts,
because they have nothing. Like, it's literally just bones.
Yeah,
like, well, but bones, and then the shields you prime separately.
Well, but I also airbrushed it, and airbrushing like eliminates the need for white 90% of the time for a color such as red, well, yellow, or white.
If you're painting with an airbrush, that completely changes everything. Like, yeah, that doesn't, like, what I'm talking, like, you're going to prime this with a spray and then paint by hand. If you're, yeah, painting with an airbrush, you should just prime with whatever the color is you're going to need. So like, if you're doing skeletons, you would prime with a bone. Like,
well I grab black the and then do bone over the black because I like that color a little bit. I like it a little darker.
Sure. But I mean, even still, like you're going to mostly, like, your primer is essentially going to be a color. Like, yeah, you don't need to worry about the intricacy. Because like, usually if you're using white, it's specifically because you're going to be doing a bunch of washes, and yeah, you want the end result to be very bright. So like, I did white for corn demons, for zinch demons, for skeleton. You know, if it's all skin and it's not a skin color, that's an important thing I should mention. When you say if it's all skin and the color is not going to be the color of skin, white primer is pretty good. Because I found that if you're trying to do the color of skin, of light skin, or any skin really, white is the worst choice. Even if you're doing pale ass like demonettes, like, I still would not prime them white if I'm doing like a realistic flesh tone at all. Realistic flesh tones, don't do white.
Well, anything realistic, I'm just gonna say this, unless you are a professional painter, and by that I mean you are not just painting for cash on the internets. Because I've sold shit on the internet for cash that I've painted that is not professional work. It's not very good, but people still paid me top dollar for it because they just don't want to paint their own shit, which is fine. I don't care about that. But unless you are a professional painter, like you have a background in art, you have won competitions, non-staff, non-junior, non-historical.
I like your little caveats there. But have you won a junior, historical, or a staff?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You put caveats. You know.
Well, I mean,
I'd say it still takes some. I'd say it still takes some oomph to win it. Even junior doesn't count because junior is your kid. So great,
yeah,
if you won, awesome. But staff, there's still definitely some staff outside of Atlanta. Those are good.
That's exactly it. There's
the classic.
There's so many caveats to staff too. It's like. And now, especially with demons being localized inside the UK, it becomes kind of a gray area.
There you go. I gotcha. If you won a French painting competition,
yeah,
done.
Okay, I'll give you that. How about that? That's perfect, Steve. I like that. If you won a competition in France, a painting competition in France.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. Because most of the crystal brush winners anyway in the United States are from France or Spain.
Yeah. Yeah, France or Spain. Like, that's it. Yeah. That's,
you know,
that's
these
straight up.
These people who've studied underneath, like, what's the big French painting? Is it the Laban? Is that the Chabon? Something like that.
I know dick and all about art. I don't even know fucking shit about Japanese art, and I'm a huge fucking weeb, and I don't know anything about that shit.
I do love that.
I only know about the big wave.
Yeah. Which is actually it's actually not even about the wave. It's about Mount Fuji, but that's besides the point. But it's like that old meme where it's like you know, Europe in the Renaissance painting, and it's like these the beautiful Leonardo da Vinci paintings or Michelangelo
and the samurai. Yeah.
They show like the Japanese during the Renaissance.
Yeah, that piece is hilarious. I love that. I actually forget that that's a classical piece. Classical Japanese art is fucking wild, man. It's weird.
And that's the thing too, is like, I do like Japanese art. I do like that, like the wood carving and the prints and all that stuff. I think it's beautiful in its own way, but it's like, comparing it to Renaissance art is apples and oranges, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, well, that's the only two, is like the mediums are all very different, because all the Renaissance, and that's the other thing too, is the Renaissance artists all played off of each other. So like a Baroque French artist would very likely encounter, you know, what an Italian artist was doing, so on and so forth.
Well, yeah.
So they could get that mutual push to like increase whatever they're doing.
And it's part of the reason why the Renaissance spread, and it's why the UK got the Renaissance, or the England got the Renaissance much later, because it just took too long to spread like that style. But it's also like with gaming and miniature painting, I see it so much nowadays that people try to bring in these aspects from other types of hobbies that also have painting. So like historical painting, which uses a lot of oils and it uses a lot of powders and things like that. And as I tell people, it's fine. You can't touch your shit after you put that stuff on there.
Yeah, it's over. Like
it's over.
It's done. You are finished.
Finito. I'm going to use an enamel pin wash. Don't use an enamel pin wash. A, it doesn't look as good as you think it looks, and B, you can't touch your model.
Yes. I still stand by, I think that models this is just my thing. I think that gaming miniatures, to be judged as gaming miniatures, someone has to touch them.
Yes.
Like if they can't be touched, it should not be in a game. It can be a beautiful and amazing piece of art. Absolutely. No question. But it is not a gaming
miniature. Yeah.
And so that's my thing. Like gaming miniatures are meant to be pieces. They're playing pieces. Like, yeah, they can look awesome, but like at the end of, you know, when it's all boiled away, it's a game piece. So if you've rendered what this thing is, this intended item is a game piece, it's no longer a game piece, it can be a very beautiful work of art, but I would never judge it as a game piece anymore.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is like people are trying to bring in techniques from Gundam painting, which is a whole different like level of painting. Like,
yeah,
I like Gundam. I don't like Gundam, the TV show. I can never get into it. But seeing the painted stuff, I'm like, this is fucking amazing. And
yeah, there's a lot of really good work from.
Yeah. But once again, it's like, you can't do a lot of that stuff on miniatures paint and on a gaming painting, because you have to touch your models if you're going to play with them. Now, someone like me who doesn't actually play the games, just claims to play the games, but I still want to, I want to have the possibility of playing with them at some time. But anyway.
I agree with that. And there's definitely some really cool techniques that are, you know, from Gundam, because like they use a combination of like military like realistic weathering, but then also like a bunch of like super stylized like lighting effects, which is really cool.
Lighting effects, OS, like they use a lot of OSL, they use a lot of non-metallic, they use a lot of lining.
And then my absolute favorite is there's a couple guys who do animation cell style, where like their Gundam looks like a three-dimensional animation cell, which is incredible. Which is super cool.
I painted something and put it on Instagram once, and one of the comments on there was, it's like, your stuff is so cool, it looks like it's cell shaded. I'm like, I don't know if I should take that as a compliment, because that's not the effect I was going for.
Like, shit. Well, so usually whenever anyone made a compliment like that towards me and it was not what I was going for, I was just like, that's exactly what I was going for.
I just reinforce
their compliment. I'm like, yeah.
Usually for me, it ends up being like some sort of backhand compliment. Like, I know they were being nice about it, but I was like, that's not what I was going for at all. All right. I think that's about it for this week. Go to Game Indeed. Classy Facebook page for all your Game Classy memery. You could like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. You could like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. The best way you can help with the podcast. You could get in contact with me and actually see all of my painted Underworld stuff on Instagram at Game Classy Joe.
And leave comments about how they look awesome and cel shaded.
They look awesome and cel shaded. Yeah, I've actually, I've over the last 3 weeks, I've painted 6 warbands to kind of finish it up. So they're not the best that I've ever done, but they're, I think that they're stylized.
There's a great, comment I've made many times about painting and stuff, and it's just like, it might not be the best, but it is done.
It is done. That's exactly it.
There's a huge difference. It's like when I was at Adepticon, and I was like, yeah, my army's fully painted. How about yours? that's the key.
Man, I was looking over at all the shit I got done over quarantine. I've painted so much. I've painted 3 full 2,000 point fantasy armies, Steve.
Nice. I've struggled deeply trying to learn Japanese. That's
what I've been doing. There you go. Are you online? Are you off? Are you still offline for everything?
I mean, if you want to contact me, the Facebook page is the place to be.
All right then.
You can also like my other Facebook page, which is VTuber Simping and Fallout New Vegas meme page, formerly the Play On Podcast meme page. Please enjoy it.
So Steve, until next time.
Please watch Ozaru Subaru. She's a current VTuber that I'm simping over amongst the many, but she's a really good one.
All right then.
All right, very good.
Later.
Game Classy.